It's time for Trackside Tonight with Randy Dye, Joe Linebarrier, and Billy Osberg. Trackside Tonight is brought to you by Daytona Dodge and Chrysler, DeLand Motorsports, Mopar Speed Shop, Volusia Speedway Park, and by Valvoline. To get in on the action, call 239-0033, star 1150, or toll free at 1-800-927-0033. Now, here's Randy, Joe, and Billy.
Welcome to Trackside Tonight. I'm Randy Dye.
I'm Joe Dirt.
And I'm Billy the Kid.
Back, we're glad to be back with you after the Labor Day holiday. Missed you guys, and I think it's, you know, there's been a lot of action take place since we've been gone. The chase for the Sprint Cup is now determined who's going to participate. I don't know if there's... if I call it be any real surprises, maybe a couple disappointments. Disappointed that we don't have Casey Kane in the field. I'm sure that the Roush folks are feeling bad about David Reagan not making it. But as far as that goes, I don't think there's any real surprises. I will. So we'll talk about the chase and get your feelings on, you know, just who you think's gonna, who's carrying the most momentum, who you think might take this thing. Do you think it's gonna be Kyle Busch? Certainly, I already got some feelings about that. Talk about Volusia Speedway Park, a big event out there this past weekend. Some cool things that are coming up out there. New Smyrna Speedway. What took place last weekend, and certainly what they got a big late model 100-lap race out there this coming weekend. Lots going on, and as always, we're going to talk to the new promoter, marketing director of the New Smyrna Speedway in Orlando Speedworld tonight about 8:15. I know you guys got an interview set up with Scott Legacy a little later.
That's Florida's prodigal son right there. I mean, raced a lot at Volusia Speedway Park and cut his teeth out there as a young man. And
St. Augustine?
Yeah, out of St. Augustine.
I saw him race a lot at St. Augustine.
Quite a bit. Yeah, and now picking up his
second win.
Yep. Had a little stint in the Craftsman Truck Series, and he is certainly on the career track. And this is a guy that's just wonderful to talk to and always... gives a good account of himself out at Volusia, so looking forward to talking to Scott Legacy tonight.
Well, we've got a lot going on, and as always, we certainly want to talk to you about what's on your mind. The phone numbers, we'll give them to you one more time, locally 239-0033, 800-927-0033, and star 1150 on your AT&T wireless cell phone. Obviously, that's a free call. You know, a lot took place this past weekend. I think, Billy, I know that you guys had a 37
sprint cars.
That's just amazing. I talked to you earlier today and you told me that, it got me all excited. It reminds me of the days in Pennsylvania. I mean, when I grew up there, to get, 25 or 30 sprint cars on any regular Saturday night, that was routine up there.
The worst part is there could have been more. We had... 38 checked in Friday night at Ocala, but we had a couple late arrivals, so it gave us around the 40 to 41 mark. We had a couple guys get upside down there that couldn't make it on Saturday, but I know of probably five guys that were there Friday that didn't get upside down that just didn't come on Saturday. So, and you know, if you add them guys in, we'd have been over the 40. I mean, you got guys that probably didn't make it. I mean, we know a guy that has a couple sprint cars sitting on the West Coast. He said he was just waiting to get a couple motors for us. So there's two more. I mean, we could have very well been up to the 45 to 50 mark there.
Now, how many cars did you guys start in the feature?
24. The deal they made, it was called the Central Florida Sprint Car Challenge, and Mike at Ocala and Tanya at Volusia put it together for Friday, Saturday, and they did 24 cars. $1,000 a win each night, and they did a $500 bonus to the guy who got the most points in two nights. So, you know, it was a good showing. We set up everything, ran some 8-lap, then ran some 8-lap heat races, and then some 8-lap B mains, and we set ourselves a field of 24 cars and went at it.
You know, I hate that I missed it, but I missed this one for a good reason. So, you know, but it sounded like that was just a great show, and I know that everybody had to, who was there, I hope you had a lot of people in the stands.
Pretty good stands. It wasn't bad at all. And, of course, Ocala had a good showing as well. Gene Lasker did pick up the win Friday night, and then Bryn Gaughan picked up the win Saturday night at Volusia. But Lasker, able to finish second Saturday night, picks up the $500 bonus for points. So he had a good weekend.
Well, the cool thing that I like more than the number of sprint cars that you had was that there was some genuine cooperation between two racetracks to do something really neat. It gave people in the area, you know, if you didn't want to go all the way to up to Ocala, the same number of cars were still in and around, and they were coming back. And what a great deal. Instead of trying to compete, there's such this competitive mentality among track promoters. Instead of trying to compete, they worked together and pulled off a big deal.
They did, and with two completely different configured racetracks, I think everybody did a nice job. I mean, as you guys realize, Billy, I mean, on the technical side of it, I don't know what kind of changes these guys had to make except for the tires, but, you know, everybody ran well. But two completely different racetracks, and everybody did a great job.
Two completely different surfaces, and I don't know that really you change or how you would change it, because they all got the same straight rear ends in them and the same motors, but the tires were the same. It was if you were a Florida Sprint Car Association car, you ran by their rules. East Bay cars ran by the East Bay rules, and they come together, and the guys have realized that, like one guy said Friday night, they were talking about a tire or a different tire, and the guys from one side said, let them run it. We're not afraid. You know, let them run it. I mean, I think they just wanted to race, and they showed it. They came out Friday night in bunches. I mean, before I got there, was probably already 10 or 12 already there. And, you know, to see what happened there Friday, it took a little bit to run the feature on Friday to get the guys going. But I think it could be from the configuration of the racetrack. But, you know, Lasker Friday night lapped everything but the second place car. So, you know, that I don't know that it was a good thing or a bad thing. I just think he was on top of his game. And I think he was on, to be honest with you, Bryn Gaughan had a good car Friday night, too, and ran into some trouble late in the race. He was running second. So I think if he would have finished second on Friday and the way it turned out Saturday, they might have split that extra money.
You know, you get a sprint car, though, that gets hooked up. He can. There's more chance for a sprint car to lap the field. And I'm talking about a super field.
Yeah.
You can get one guy, Lasoski is an example. He can lap Swindell and all the boys if he gets it going. And you got a better chance of a disparity like that in sprint cars on dirt than you do any place else.
Right.
And so, the fact that he got away wouldn't mean that the rules were all screwed up or they favored one of those versus the other. It's just he was on his game and he smoked them, and that happens.
Randy, Bud's on line one.
Yeah, let's take him. Hey, Bud.
Hey.
Go ahead. You're on.
All right, man. Hey, I enjoyed every bit of the show, man.
This is Bud, buddy.
Yeah, that's Push Truck Buddy.
Buddy, you did a good job Saturday night, man. Let me thank you.
Friday and Saturday,
yeah.
Hey, thank you for the good word, man.
Yeah, you definitely did. There weren't a lot of guys out there, and, I mean, you were so critical, to have you out there. You did a nice job.
That's, I'm glad to hear that. I had a blast anyways. I was really impressed with the way Ocala went. It was amazing to me how well they hooked up, but how a couple of guys was able to hook up, and the rest of them, they just sort of couldn't get a grab on it. So, and then when they went to Volusia the next night, and everybody was pretty well even then, and it made for a heck of a show.
Yeah, I mean, you just go flat out around Volusia, right? Randy can tell you that.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, just hold the steering wheel.
Well, Joe, that is maybe the biggest understatement I ever heard.
Probably, okay. I'm sure of it.
but there's a little more to it than that. But
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it is. But you do get if you're lifting it at Volusia, you're going backwards.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, I'll let you guys go.
Bud, thanks a lot, buddy.
Call, buddy. Good job.
All right, man.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, I think, guys, we really got a responsibility to let the community, the racing community, know to how good that deal is. Because as, even though you said you got a good crowd, we ought to be able to do a good enough job and be persuasive enough to those people out there to get that place just standing room only. Standing room only. To come to a show like that, when you get 37 sprint cars in one place, and you got a chance to see them. There are things that happen there that defy description. You can't you will never be able to accurately report what took place unless you witnessed it with your own eyes.
That is so true. Man, that is so true.
And you know, and if you miss the event, it's a big deal. You need to get out there. Well, every time these sprint cars are in town, you got to get out there and see them. Well, we got our friend Gene. Gene, we're gonna get you. Go ahead, go. Let's go. We got you for a few minutes here, and you know, I want to let you know something, that the consensus here in the studio is that Dale Jr. wrecked Kyle Busch.
Yep.
Sunday, that it was a deliberate and malicious act, and that Dale Jr. was, in fact, it was an act of retribution.
From May.
Yeah, that's the consensus here, and we want to know what you think about that.
I don't care if he did or not. I'm glad, you know. Well, what the heck? I mean, I have told you guys in the last few years, if they want these guys to be just little fairy dancers, put them in the little tutus and put them out in the car.
Well, I can tell you this, that first off, what I said to you is
a reminder of Saturday.
It's a little bit of an exaggeration.
we'll tell you about that.
We don't really think that it was a deliberate malicious act. And frankly, there is some debate among us about what really took place. I happen to believe that Kyle Busch wrecked Kyle Busch, that Dale Jr. was under him, and that Dale Jr. tried to keep from wrecking Kyle Busch by locking up the brakes. And when Kyle Busch turned down, that's where the wreck happened.
That's what I saw. But again, I can be considered prejudiced, but I try to be fair when it comes to that because I don't like the dirty
racing.
That's
the same thing I saw.
I do not like dirty racing.
Now, Billy, on the radio is saying what he really thinks.
I missed it live.
Yeah, well, yeah. You sorry missed it live. Hey, look, do me a favor. Give us a few minutes. Call us back. I think we've got Joe Lewandowski on the line, and we want to talk to him about his new job.
No problem. I'll call you back.
Call me back. Okay, thanks.
Okay, hang on. Bye-bye.
See, you're already making waves, Joe. You're calling in early. We're taking you early, and we want to welcome you to the show. Before you say anything, folks, this is Joe Lewandowski. He is the new promoter / marketing director for both New Smyrna Speedway, the Orlando Speed World, and I personally can say that he's a friend of mine going way back to about 1984, I believe, Joe, somewhere in that range.
You're right there, Randy. When I got my jumped in the real world, I guess, and said to myself I was going to be an insurance man, and went to work for Northwestern Mutual and got to meet all the Lacey family, and you were there working with them, Randy, and I think I sold probably about 10 or 15 people out of that dealership, and that was a lot of fun back then.
Yeah, well, when we met again the other day, as we both were younger, we both weighed a little less. And I don't know if we were any more spunky, but certainly it was a little difference in appearance anyway. But
our hair wasn't gray either.
Well, I was going to try to skip that one.
I wasn't going to let you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I guarantee.
But Joe, hey, really, listen. I appreciate the fact that you're out there. I know you've only been in the position, you know, just a few days, and I know that there's a lot to do. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what's been going on with Joe Lewandowski over the last few years. What's your kind of a summary of your resume, and then what are you going to bring to the table? Right now, we're kind of in this theme of change. You know, the election, everybody's talking about change, and now you're out of New Smyrna Speedway, and I'm sure that's going to be a change.
Yeah, and Randy, before I get started, I want to thank Don Rohn for recommending me to you know, the Hart family, and I also want to thank Jane and Robert for hiring me. And like I said, I have a lot of experience in this business. Had the opportunity, and I joke around with people, but I had an opportunity to basically run short tracks on all four corners of the United States of America. I had ran a dirt track in Tucson, ran a 5/8 of an asphalt track up in Washington, and ran a quarter mile bull ring in Riverside Park in Agawam, Mass. And now I'm down here in Florida, so.
Let's not forget about Erie, Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, and Erie, and Lake, you know, Lake Erie and Wall Township Speedway in New Jersey. So, I got a lot of experience, and you know, the biggest thing is being able to take some of the things that worked, and hopefully incorporate them down here. I think one of our biggest challenges, we're in a real vicious cycle, and especially asphalt short track racing in the Southeast, is that the cars have gotten very expensive. You know, you got to use a lot of tires to race asphalt.
I can attest to that.
There's not enough fans coming in. So, the poor promoter, he doesn't have the money that needs to be paid to these guys because there's just not the fan count to increase purses. So we're in a real vicious cycle right now, and I think one of the biggest things that we have to do, and when Robert hired me for this position, he said to me, Joe, be honest with me, what's your strengths and what's your weaknesses when we were talking about the position? And I said, Robert, if you're looking to hire an administrator, someone to sit behind a desk and do all that kind of good stuff, you're hiring the wrong man. If you're looking for someone to get out there and beat the bushes and help increase car count, get fans, more fans to come, sell some sponsorships, get the racetrack involved in the community, then you need to hire me because that's my forte. That's my specialty. And very fortunately, I inherited this, working at New Smyrna. You got some great administrators there. You got Kim Brown, who does a fantastic job.
And does so with a smile, I might add.
And yeah, she's great. Yeah. And she gets it. Kim gets it. And the rest of the staff, they've been there. They know how to do it. So it gives me the time to go out there and hustle up and see the people. And it's no different from when I was selling insurance than it's to what I'm doing right now. And I forget my general manager, when he told me when I was working for Northwestern Mutual, he says, Joe, you don't get paid to sit behind a desk. You got to go out there and make calls and see people. And that's what I'm going to have to do, Randy. And like I said, I'm really excited, hopefully, that we can put a deal to get Daytona Dodge back in the fold because, you were a great supporter of the Speedway. But, you're also a great ambassador. You opened up a lot of doors for the Speedway. So that's what I'm looking forward to, really working with you, too, and hopefully we could get people back in.
Well, it was fun for me. I think I said to you privately that I bring a different perspective or a multifaceted perspective. I love racing. I was a race fan before I was anything, a fan. And then I was a sponsor after I was a fan. And then after I was a fan and a sponsor, I became a competitor. And so from that standpoint, I really have had a lot of different experiences. And I know how important it is that all three of those different kinds of people be given the correct amount of consideration, a value for whatever it is they're spending, whether it be, the ticket price or the sponsorship price, or for that matter, the competitor paying his way into the racetrack and running for a certain prize and so on. So I think that's one of the things I know that you get, that you understand that.
One of the things I call, Randy, and you and I discuss in your office, is the golden triangle. There's three points to the triangle. You got the fans, you got the competitors, and you got the sponsors. And let's face it, NASCAR will tell you tomorrow that if the sponsorship money dried up tomorrow, NASCAR's out of business. Because motorsports is such a sponsor-driven sport. Now, you take the fans, if the fans aren't buying the tickets, guess what? Now you don't have income. Now, if the competitors aren't coming, now you don't have a show. So you got to cater to all the needs of three very important groups of people. And sometimes it's hard to please that many people, but you sure have to try. And I think the biggest thing is you have to listen. And I think the older I get, the better listener I am, because I can remember when I first took the job, I was one of those got tough guys, where I was like to yell and scream at the competitors and all that kind of stuff. And that's not the way to go. I mean, you got to be it's basically simple terms, customer friendly, because the fans are your customers and the competitors are your customers. And God forsaken, we all know the sponsors are our customers.
Right. Well, I'm glad I'm glad you're out there. I'm excited about some of the things that you're gonna do, I know that one of the changes, I don't know that it can be attributed to you, but we've already made a change relative to tires, and that's Hoosier. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's occurred. And I know that from a fan and a driver and a sponsor perspective, you've got some great ideas, and I can't wait till you get to implement some of them. And I know that maybe this event we had last weekend wasn't all you were doing, but it wasn't bad. There was a decent amount of folks there. There were a decent amount of cars. I think you probably were surprised somewhat by, the late models. There were 16 cars in the pits. Not all of them could make the feature. They had a problem here or there. But that's a reasonable amount of late models for a Saturday night program.
No, I think that was a great turnout of late models. And I think, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, with Terry and the current staff there, they came up with kind of a pretty cool concept, whereas the week before the big tour race, you know, they have a late model race. So then that way, the guys that are the touring type guys who are on big budgets, they can come up here and race on Saturday night, get a good feel for the racetrack, and come back the following Saturday and run in the, I don't know if it's still going to be called a Goodyear late model.
I doubt it.
Series or whatever they're going to call it. We haven't figured that out. But, you know, it gives them an opportunity to get a warm-up and then come back and run for the, you know, for the points and the big purse. So that's kind of a cool concept, the way they've done that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't know if you were paying attention to that race or not, but I'm not sure that anybody perceived it to be a warm up. It was
everybody was racing pretty hard. And I guess what I'm trying to say, warm up is
no, I'm kidding you.
They get to put their car in, you know, a competitive situation, because there was a lot of passing, a lot of dicing, a few banging into each other. But it was a good late model race.
Yeah, it was from my perspective, it was a good late model race. I'll say that.
You got to drive your car.
Yeah,
trailer.
Yeah, that was a good thing. Hey, one of the things that I need to let you go, but I want to ask you this. I heard you say one thing Saturday night that has me excited, and I think if everybody really heard it, would have them all excited. And that was that you are going to hold two things, town hall meetings by division, so that you have an opportunity to just to hear people's perspectives. And secondly, you're going to establish some competition committees whereby you get representation from the drivers with the competition director. And meaning that you're going to at least have there's a forum to express your concern, for drivers to express their concern. Not that you're going to be, you know, a lay down and agree with everything that one guy wants or what another guy wants, but to try to draw some consensus which keeps the sport healthy for everybody to participate in. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are. And Butch and I had a lot of talks about that. And one of the things that, you know, being new to the whole situation, I have that advantage where people are going to tell me what they like and what they don't like. And that's my whole thing. I want to sit down with, you know, if there's 20 late model car owners and drivers, sit in a room. Butch and I are going to be in there, and I want to know what they like and what they don't like. And not saying we could change everything, because we can't, because, you know, a lot of the changes we can't make because of just the economy the way it is. But we want to hear some of the ideas. And, you know, I had one, I think it was a car owner or maybe a crew member. I was talking to him on the phone last week, and he said to me, Joe, one of the things, you know, maybe you could help us get into the pits faster.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, it's just little things like that that we could do. But like I say,
he's right. I don't know who it was, but he's right.
Competitors are our customers, so we're going to listen. And, you know, it's not like we're going to change City Hall, because we're not going to change City Hall, because, you know, there's a lot of neat things that Don Nerone and Terry Roberts have put together at this racetrack. You got great tradition. But like I say, our biggest thing that Butch and I want to do is we want to fine-tune it with some of the ideas from the crew members, the car owners, and the drivers.
Well, that's good to look forward to. Hey, Joe Lineberrier, who is the voice of the Volusia Speedway Park, and actually, he is the voice of our show. He's got a couple questions here for you.
Go ahead.
Hey, Joe, first of all, let me say that I've never met a guy named Joe I didn't like. All right, but obviously your resume is impressive. There's no doubt about it. In your opinion, the insurgence of dirt racing, how much of an impact on local asphalt racing has that had, or any at all, do you see?
You know, I'm a firm believer. I think the dirt fan and the asphalt fan don't cross over. And the reason I think I had a pretty good knowledge or experience that firsthand, because when I ran Lake Erie Speedway for 3 years, we were surrounded by three very successful dirt tracks. We had one that was 12 miles away, we had one that was 35 miles away, and we had another one that was about 50 miles away. And those fans, it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday circuit, and those fans, wouldn't come to Lake Erie Speedway if I let them in for free.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it was kind of like almost maybe like crossing the Mason-Dixon line. It was like,
sure.
Hey, the dirt fans are dirt fans the asphalt fans are asphalt fans. And to me, they're two unique animals with two different sets of fans. The cars are totally different. I myself, one of the greatest things going for dirt short track racing now is that for some reason, the dirt stars like the Billy Moyers, the Scott Blomquist, the Steve Kinzers, they have stayed in their particular sport.
Yeah.
And they're legends, they're heroes. And that's why I was joking, Robert and I were just joking around, and Robert said to me, well, Joe, what do you think would happen if New Smyrna was dirt? I'd say, hey, Robert, I can tell you right now, if we booked the World of Outlaw sprint car race, I can guarantee you this, we put 5,000 fans in the seats, and they'd pay $35 a ticket, and they'd be happy.
The only thing I can tell you is start ordering clay.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's the advantage of dirt racing versus asphalt racing. And I think, you know, with NASCAR right now, NASCAR has created, in the last 15 years, I say, a new fan. That new fan is, he doesn't know anything about, he or she doesn't know very much about short track racing. They call themselves race fans, but really what they are is Nextel Cup fans.
Yeah, that's true.
And
they created a vacuum for the short track.
Sure did.
Yeah.
35 years ago, when you learned about racing, you learned about it from the short track first. Then you got to, you know, you're saying to yourself, hey, I'm going to watch the Indy cars. I'm going to watch the cars at Daytona. And the only way you'd be able to watch them is maybe on Wide World of Sports.
Yeah.
Now there's so much, you know, you got trucks on TV, you got the Nationwide on TV, you got Nextel Cup on TV, or Sprint, or I don't call it a Sprint Series. I mean, those people are diehard fans, but they're all the TV fans.
Yeah, and another hurdle for you guys to overcome is the fact that they continue to turn the lights on at these cup races on Saturday nights. I mean, just killing you.
But at the same time,
you'll see the commercial that says, you know, show the driver, this is where we grew up, America's Short Tracks.
Support them.
So, I mean, I just don't get it.
One of NASCAR's, and I hate to pick on them, but one of NASCAR's greatest failures, and Joe, you'll agree with me on this, is their short track, their NASCAR short track series. It doesn't work in many places.
It worked years ago at Volusia. I'll never forget it. I mean, David Rogers going to the 94 championship, Tony Ponder, or 92 and the 94 for Tony Ponder.
It's a different time.
You're right.
You know, it works in some areas of the country, and some areas of the country it doesn't work.
Well, it'll work good in what you would consider the core corridor, which is the, you know, that southeast where NASCAR's roots were.
Well, I'll tell you where it does work. I mean, Joe, I'm sure you know Bob Watson. I mean,
Bought my house.
Did he? Okay, so you know Bob Watson, but you know it's working at Lee Speedway. I mean, he's packing that place, and then that's a.
And you know, NASCAR in New England, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
you got Stafford Motor Speedway, Thompson Speedway.
Indeed.
You know Lee. You got Star. You got and like I say, and I always tell people, and trust me, this is the first short track that I ever worked at or promoted or was a part of that was not NASCAR sanctioned.
Well, you know what? You and I have to have a conversation about this one because I pushed, well, let's just say this, call me. How's that?
Yeah.
We can talk. I've got some ideas relative to that.
Listen, I think the Fast Car brand is great, though. I think it's unique. It's, you know, close correlation with NASCAR, a little play on, you know, letters. But
well, yeah,
I think Fast Car is great.
You know the history of that one.
I know the history of the logo. I'll tell you that.
Well, we all joke about that one.
Let's just go on and move. One last thing, let you go. I heard, I think it was Rusty referring to Frank Kimmel and the Rockingham, well, North Carolina Motor Speedway event on January the 1st of 2009. Do you know anything about that? Can you talk to us about that?
From what I understand, Frank Kimmel's been putting on these big time street stock races, and I'm not really sure if they're street stocks or super stocks, whatever we want to call them, but he's putting one on at Rockingham. I think he did one at Salem. From what I understand, I think he did one at Kentucky Speedway. He's basically taking, you know, Saturday night street stock. He also did one at Bristol, taking a Saturday night racer and giving that competitor an opportunity to compete at a big track. And you know, to me, as long as the cars are safe, I think that's always someone's dream. It's always someone's dream that, you know, you're racing at New Smyrna Speedway, and all of a sudden I get a chance to take my car and race it at Bristol.
Well, Joe, I've raced, my first racetrack I ever raced at was Rockingham. Well, North Carolina Motor Speedway. And I'm going to tell you something. I realize there's only so fast a race car can go, but I don't know that there's any limit about how hard a race car can hit. And I would hope, don't know the deal, but I would hope that if you're talking about some of what would be considered the super stocks at New Smyrna Speedway, is that what we're referring to?
I think it's a form of a street stock with big motors and
like a sportsman. Okay, well that gives me a little bit of hope, but I a mile and a half racetrack, and that's a pretty fast racetrack. There's the impacts, the wrecks. They're not going to be an easy wreck there. But nonetheless, I agree with you. The way we used to look at Lakeland around here, and it was such a great thing to go to Lakeland. You know, I loved that racetrack, and that's my biggest regret, is that I waited a little too long to get back and not be able to race over there, you know, because they've now since closed it. But it'll be cool, and I'm sure we'll have more details about that as we get closer. Is that right?
Yeah, and Rusty knows a lot of those things. I think Rusty and I've been talking to Frank, and I think Frank's thinking about coming down here to talk to all the competitors in Central Florida about the race. And I'm sure that his safety package is probably pretty very stringent, and, you know, we got to have Hans devices. I'm sure they'll check the roll cages, the fuel cells, the belts, and all that good stuff, because just like you said, Randy, you know, you're going pretty fast at those big tracks, and when stuff happens, it happens very, very fast. And, hopefully they keep their safety record up, and they continue to do something, because it does glorify that Saturday night racer.
No question. Hey, Joe, thanks for joining us, and we really wish you all the best. And obviously you have my support, and if there's anything else I can do to help you, you know how to get a hold of me.
Yeah, welcome to Florida.
I'm looking forward to working with everybody down here in Central Florida. And like I say, it's neat. It's neat. It's a great opportunity, and we got a lot of work to do.
Order red clay.
Okay.
Too much dust.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, guys.
See you. Thanks, Joe.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was Joe Lewandowski. He is the new promoter and marketing director of the New Smyrna Speedway and Orlando Speed World. And, folks, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
There's dirt racing right in your own backyard here at Volusia Speedway Park in Barberville, featuring the real racing you're looking for every Saturday night. Side-by-side, 3 and 4 wide, high-action racing thrills for the entire family. Volusia Speedway Park, the South's fastest half-mile clay track, featuring dirt-late models, sportsmen, street stocks, open-wheel modifieds, mini stocks, and pure stocks. Your best value for your family entertainment dollar. Call us at 386-985-4402 or visit our website at VolusiaSpeedwayPark.com.
Interstate Battery of Daytona Beach wants you to be prepared. If you need a battery, we have it. Automotive, marine, commercial, motorcycle, golf cart, cellular, generator, UPS backup, garage remotes, AA, AAA, quadruple A, CD, gel batteries, and the list goes on. Interstate Battery of Daytona Beach, 806 Mason Avenue, has hard-to-find batteries. Interstate Battery of Daytona Beach has free battery testing. Call 386-252-5909 or stop by 806 Mason Avenue, Anderson Avenue. Interstate Battery of Daytona Beach. The beach wants you to be prepared.
If you're in business, your accounting system can make or break you. The undisputed leader in accounting software for small business is QuickBooks. And now it's easier than ever to master the QuickBooks program. Balaban and Schmidt, PA, CPAs, offer 1 and 2 day classes that'll help you maximize the power of QuickBooks. The classes are small, offer lots of personal attention, and are taught by qualified professionals. Call 238-8680 today and register for the next class. Hurry, as class size is limited. Learn to create your company's books from scratch. Set up accounts, create reports, process checks, bills, and payments. With the Balaban and Schmidt QuickBook class, participants receive an easy-to-follow textbook and diskette and will work on their own individual computer. Don't wait. Call today, 238-8680. The QuickBooks software can help you manage inventory, track your expenses, administer payroll, including federal payroll taxes. Get the help you need and get it now. Call Balaban and Schmidt, PA, CPAs, for the QuickBooks class today. Call 238-8680 now.
Are you confused about getting in shape and feeling better? Do you have questions about your exercise program? I invite you to tune in to Fitness Friday every Friday at 9:06, right after Wake Up Daytona. Fitness Friday is sponsored by Bodies Personalized Fitness and Healthy Inspirations Healthy Weight Loss. Fitness Friday gives you info, answers questions, and has guests to improve your quality of life through proper nutrition, positive motivation, and productive exercise. So tune in with me, Tasso Kiriakis, and the Fitness Friday gang at 9:06 on WNDV, 1150 AM.
In business, managers are always taking a hard look at every penny they spend. They want not only a good value, but a great value for their dollar. The kind of value offered every day by Eisenhower Office Supply and Furniture. Eisenhower's is a family-run business, in business for more than 35 years, and for more than 18 years, you voted them best round in the News Journal Reader's Choice Award. Whether it's paper or printer cartridges, Eisenhower's has it in stock or can get it fast from their 35,000 item catalog. Eisenhower's also features quality office furniture at the best prices in town. So to make your business a showplace and get the job done efficiently, call Eisenhower Office Supply at 253-8125 or the Eisenhower Design and Space Planning Expert. That's 253-8125 or stop by Eisenhower Office Supply and Furniture, 601 North Ridgewood Avenue in Daytona Beach, a few short blocks south of Mason. Eisenhower Office Supply and Furniture can save you time and gas with their free delivery and setup service. Call them today at 253-8125.
Call Trackside tonight at 239-0033, star 1150, or toll free at 1-800-927-0033. And now back to Trackside tonight with Randy, Joe, and Billy.
I'm Randy.
I'm Joe Dirt.
I'm Billy the Kid.
You're up, Joe.
Welcome back to Trackside tonight, everybody. You're listening to Florida's longest-running motorsports talk show right here on Racing 1150 WNDB.
And RealRacingUSA.com.
That's right. How was that, Randy?
That was awesome. That was good stuff.
But don't forget Dirt World. That airs on Real Racing USA every Wednesday night at 7:30. You'll hear Billy the Kid and myself, Joe Dirt, as we interview the stars of dirt racing from around the country. And we anticipate the visit from Shane Clanton at a Locust Grove, Georgia, winner of the World 100 at Eldora Motor Speedway on Saturday night.
Shane got a lot of change in his pocket on Sunday, bud.
Yeah, he did.
The Locust Ash.
Sugar Shane. Likes us to call him the Locust Grove Lightning, but we still call him Sugar Shane.
Yeah, well, that's a long time ago.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Gene, you're back with us.
Yeah.
What's up?
I was disappointed for poor Brad Keselowski the other night.
Wait, Gene, first of all, let me just say that, you know, weather-wise, I think NASCAR really, really stepped up, made the right call with, of course, the remnants of Hannah pounding the, you know, the Carolina coast there. But they did a good job deciding to do this on Sunday. My only, I don't know, misunderstanding is why they wouldn't run the Busch race first. I just don't get that. I mean, they competed with the NFL on Saturday night or Sunday night.
They compete with NFL on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right.
They compete. Yeah, they are going to compete with the NFL, you know, for the rest of the year, and that's always a tough deal. But
I turned it on. They had 17 to go.
Yeah, I agree with their call. I think they did good. Not trying to fight it, you know.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, there's so many variables that could create a bad circumstance that I think they had to do the right thing. You don't know how long, what kind of strength that storm is going to have and how far it's going to carry and what it's going to do to people. The worst thing isn't necessarily the immediate area. It's all the people that are trying to get there.
The disappointment I had was Joey Logano didn't get to make the show.
Yeah.
And Joey Logano, oh, yeah.
He
right.
was fast in practice. He was like fourth fastest.
You know what?
This week, though, driving the 96 car at Loudon.
I'm going to tell you something. I watched him again in that nationwide race. There is no way that it's believable that he's 18 years old.
He's that good.
You know, he's that good. He's just. I watched him run. Yeah, but there's a difference. The kid at least has the kid has some manners. Okay.
Oh, I didn't say anything about manners, did I?
Okay. He has some manners, and I watched him run inside forever. I'm trying to remember who he was running against. But never, ever, ever gave up. And just did a phenomenal job. I mean, like this guy's been doing it for 20 years. And I got to say, I don't think I've ever been as impressed. Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt Jr., I hesitate to call him a Tim Richmond in terms of ability only because he hasn't driven as many different kind of cars as Tim Richmond. Right. But what he has been able to do in a stock car at this stage of his career is Tim Richmond like, as far as I'm concerned?
Well, you can compare him to Tim Richmond, but I was kind of, to be honest with you, and I don't want to say anything that I shouldn't or whatever, but here we go. I've been comparing this guy to Davey Allison because when Davey came out, how good he was, how young he was. And you know, no matter what, Davey Allison had the record for most wins as a rookie, and Tony Stewart tied it. But I'm saying, don't get me wrong, I don't know that this kid will do it because he's going to run 7 races this year, which means next year I don't think he'll be eligible for Rookie of the Year.
I think
Yeah, he is.
It's a 5-year
You can't go over, I think, 9.
There's a 9 out there. But yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to do it, but I'm saying I've been comparing this as young as he is. Remember how good Davey was when he first came around?
You know, I'm not real good at that because, Davey and I were friends, and I just black all that out. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, when you bring it up, there's no question. I mean, he was a phenomenal. And the other thing about Davey Allison was different than a lot of the guys is he completely understood the race car.
Yes.
You know, and he built race cars. He set race cars up. I mean, this guy, he was a hands-on guy.
What I'm saying is the comparison here is not only on, but off the track.
Yeah, gentlemen.
Yeah, see the way he presents himself.
Very
it's
kind.
It's the way Davey presented himself.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Davey Allison never, ever got cocky.
No.
And one of my greatest memories about Davey Allison, we went to Donnie Allison's farm one Easter. And I remember, it wasn't Davey winning races, but it was Davey giving all the kids at the farm tractor rides all day long. That was his bag, and I'll never forget that. And I'm glad you said it because it just made me think of it as a fond memory.
You talk about somebody being charitable. I think the one that's quite charitable and doesn't get any credit for it is Morgan Shepherd.
Oh, I mean, he lives his life. He's dedicated.
That's what
his
I'm
life
saying.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get. You never hear anything about Morgan Shepherd. All you hear is, well, he raced so much, and he gets out there just to race. He races a few laps, and something goes on with the car, and he's out. But you don't ever hear about his charitable work. But I was fortunate enough years ago when Neil Barnett had the show Winners.
Yeah.
I think he did a thing on Neil. I mean, on Morgan.
Well, Morgan Shepherd is a. I mean, he comes to our dealership every February.
And oh, does he?
When we usually find something for him to drive while he's in town.
He's a good guy.
Oh, good.
And is a true believer, and I say that with all respect.
I think one of the things is with Morgan Shepherd is, and when you say something goes wrong, you say something goes wrong with the car. I don't know that really something goes wrong with the cars is that he don't have a crew. So there's no sense in pitting when it comes time to pit. He just park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I mean, for him, it's about, you know, the entry fee.
Right.
It actually, the way it works out for him, if he makes a show, it can be a profitable event.
Yeah.
And because, believe it or not, it doesn't require, he's never going to win a race because he doesn't have a crew. But he can go there, pay the entry fee, pay the travel expenses.
He wins every time he makes the show.
He wins every time he makes the show.
Had some good runs with the Wood Brothers, too.
Yeah.
I'll
never forget.
He sure did.
Oh, yeah. Good runs with
absolutely
the Wood Brothers.
Absolutely did. Yep.
Yeah.
Scott Wimmer I saw was second yesterday in the Busch race last night. That was a good run for him. He's looking for a job.
He is looking for a job. He's out of a job.
He's a good runner.
Yeah.
Yep. I'd like to know when one of the car owners is going to get rid of a real dumpy driver. But I don't think he will because it's his son. That's Rusty Wallace. Steve is a wreck of a driver.
Man, that was cold.
Well.
Hey, how long's Steve been? What's this? His third year?
It's better.
He should know a little more than he does, darling.
Yeah, I know. You ain't got to tell me. I seen him at his best.
Yeah.
I seen him at his best.
Yeah, Snowball Derby, right?
And home really. I bet if there was any other car owner, Steve would have been a long time ago.
Well, I think that's true. You know, but he's not. I think what really happened there, I believe more than anything else, is that they moved him to a position too quickly. You know, one of the things that happens, you put a guy, first off, a Wallace, Rusty Wallace's son, isn't going to be able to have a subtle entry into the sport. There's going to be an expectation that is that's high. And secondly, the media is going to put out a lot of pressure on him, and I think in this case he just wasn't ready for it. He wasn't ready for it emotionally, so as a result, it's been a bad thing. And you know what, Gene? I'm going to have to do this to you one more time because we got another caller on the line.
Our good friend Jimmy Jeep, long distance. Gene.
Okay,
Okay. We'll talk to you next week anyway, guys.
Always a pleasure. How you feeling anyway? You feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better.
You sound great, Gene. Thank you.
Thanks.
See you.
Talk to you later, guys.
All right.
Yeah. Bye.
Austin Dillon finished the 26 yesterday.
Yeah, it was his first race.
Yeah. Sprint cars at Volusia and no Jimmy Jeep. It just wasn't right. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Hey, I got your push trucks.
Yes, you did. You did do that.
I know. You saw those results. I couldn't believe seeing Rocky Sullivan back there racing.
Yeah, and that's something.
Rocky's been around for years over Tampa and disappeared and, you know, worked on trail business.
Yep. And he had a slew of fans there, buddy. Every time I'd say his name, the place just went wild.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to report in. I was up to Darlington for that historic racing festival Labor Day weekend. And I'm going to tell you, you need to go to it, you know, next year, because it was great. We had over 100 cars, sprints, midgets, old Indy cars.
Nice.
All types of stock cars. You know, we had old racers around it. David Pearson, those people treated him like Elvis up there.
I'll bet.
Nice guy. Marvin Ponch, Buddy Baker, Walter Bazaar, Allison's.
Certainly Ray Fox made the trip, I'm sure.
Ray, I think he was there. Cotton Owens.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I mean, see these guys go out there and do a few laps, and they had autograph sessions, and they were free. You just paid your admission.
Sure, sure.
And interviews, and I got to meet Barney Hall.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's a pistol. But, I mean, just around that track, since I haven't been there since May of 1967. That was my first time to be see a NASCAR race and then go back there, you know, years later and work the track.
Yeah.
You know, Glenda got a little concerned when I went up on the banking. She wouldn't let me get a stripe.
He just wanted one.
No, but we had a good turnout, our DARA guys, and a bunch of them are going to be racing this coming Saturday at Orlando. And but we had a good time, and I'm glad to and see the results that you guys had at Ocala and Volusia for the sprints. I mean, it was great.
Let me tell you, the most interesting person we had out there as far as a driver had to be Don Sesko. From Auckland, New Zealand.
Did he have his nail polish on?
Dude, full-blown dress, nail polish, hair in a bun, jewelry. I mean, everything full-blown. I was talking to him. Told me that he moved here to the United States in the 60s, the early 60s. He was in his 20s. He joined the U.S. Marine Corps, served in Vietnam, came back, drove the last race at Volusia, Jimmy, in 88, just before Dickey tore up the asphalt and made it dirt.
Yeah.
And he parked next to Sammy Swindell, and he said, of course, that's when I was a man. And he said, certainly, if you tell people my name is Don Sesko and I win this race, you know, they're certainly not going to be prepared for what they'll see. I said, well, the worst part about it is when you do get out of that race car, you know, what they're going to see. He said, well, somebody will just have to bring the dress to Victory Lane.
Yeah. Well,
great guy, man.
I've known him. We started working with him up to Jacksonville with All-Stars, I mean, years ago. And we used to call him the Sheepherder.
He
came from New Zealand.
New Zealand, absolutely.
Yeah, him and his boys, great boys.
And there is no one going to tell him about what he wears or how he looks, I'll guarantee.
Oh, no, he has gone through quite a transformation. I saw him there, I guess it was up to Putnam County last year. And
Self-sponsored deal. I mean, you know, she works real hard on that program. She really does. And I'll tell you,
you did a good job on that one, Jeff.
Oh, well, thank you. We recognized Mike. Go ahead, Randy.
I'm just wondering, is there a budding romance possibly?
Oh, God. What does this say? Let me see that. Let me read that.
Hey, Joe, you've got a guest waiting online.
Hey, real quick, though, but I'll tell you, we did a nice little thing. We recognized Mike McCants, had Barry out there. Of course, Tommy was out there, or Larry, I'm sorry, I called it Barry, but everybody was really nice out there about the Mike McCants thing, so it was cool to recognize him.
Yeah, I was really surprised when we lost him. I mean, he was such a nice guy. I mean, I've worked with those guys in Florida Sprint Car Association for years and watched them grow up and, you know, evolve. And Dill was one of them. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And, you know, when you can't, you don't know what's happening, and all of a sudden you see it in the paper. Or, you know, it's
so sudden. Hey, Jimmy, are you listening online tonight in Indiana?
Yeah, we're listening live right now. Glenda's out there and listening. I'm in the bathroom, so she can hear me talking.
Oh, well, listen, keep listening. On the line with us, of course, is from Florida's First Coast, picking up an ARCA win, his second, actually, at Chicagoland, Scott Lagacy. So, Jimmy, thank you very much, and try to listen.
All right, see you. Bye-bye.
Be good, man.
Bye.
Jimmy Jeep.
Scott Lagacy.
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on, man?
Congratulations, first off.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. It was a fun weekend.
We were talking this afternoon. You can't hear. I didn't know what you was doing over there. You know, if you guys are just tuning in, we got on the phone with us yesterday's winner, Chicagoland ARCA race, Scott Lagacy. When Scott, I was talking to you this afternoon on the phone, and you was talking about this deal just got put together a couple weeks ago. You was driving Billy Vittorini's car. Tell us about it, man.
Oh, it was really a wild situation, much as kind of how this whole sport is up here. Billy and I became friends just racing against each other and had a lot of respect for each other. And Billy stepped out of the car this year, and his program has been had quite a few different drivers in the seat this season. And he's taken on more of the crew chief role. And, you know, as a driver, I don't know if I could ever do that. I'll be honest with you. And it's kind of his niche, and he loves it. But Billy and I talked last week, just catching up. We talk every couple months and just to see how each other's are and their families and whatever. And they're really great, great people. So I kind of just while we're talking, say, hey, man, I'd love to go run, you know, the other ARCA race here for too long. It'd be fun to go do. And not knowing that there was another mile and a half at Chicago coming up, which happens to be their home track, that they're born and raised in Chicago and Illinois. So he said, well, we actually were planning on taking three cars there, and there's only one going now. You want to go? I said, well, who's going to crew chief it? He says, if you go, I'll do it. I said, all right, if you're going to do it and you've promised me we're going to go to win this thing and there's no other reason to go, then I'll go do it. And in a 4 days' time, those guys had a good friend of mine that helped me on my ASA program that now works up here, Ron Schutte. He went over there and helped, took his days off in the weekend, and their guys busted their butts and put this car together in 4 days' time. The Motor Builder Pro Motor, which I tell you what, it's the first time I've run one of his motors, and it was a pretty stout piece. His guy scrambled and got it together, and we showed up, and it rolled off the truck. First lap on the racetrack, which doesn't mean a lot to many people, but it was a 30-80. And second lap by was a 30-50, and the second quickest car at that time was a 31 flat. So it was a pretty good little race car. And we worked on it through practice, really kind of had a pretty easy practice until about midway through, and got into a little bit of a situation where we were really, really tight and couldn't get it out of it. And into practice, we threw some things at it that helped it a little bit, but wasn't quite enough. And so we got together between practice and qualifying said, okay, are we here to sit on the pole or are we here to win the race? Because ARCA's got a gear rule, so you kind of got to, you got a little bit choose what you're going to do. Most of the guys opted for the qualifying gear, and we just sang gear, and we just said, well, let's be smart. We're here to race. We're here to win this thing. And so we took the race gear decision, which was without a doubt the right call from Billy's side. And so we did that and went out for qualifying, and he told me before I got in the car, he says, all right, just one and done this thing, run one lap. If it feels like a good lap, you know, we'll just see where it puts us. And so I went out and qualified, and it ran through, it hit the chip really bad down the front straightaway, and I just underestimated as a driver how much it slowed the times down, because it ran through one and two almost wide open, and then three and four was really good. And we had run a quick enough in practice to be right at what the pole was at that time. So I crossed the flag stand and shut it down, and he told me what the lap time was. I was unhappy because basically gave away the pole in my mind. Started second, and we made some pretty drastic changes just to make sure we weren't tight, because we knew the race was going to run basically green flag for quite a bit. And right. We started the race and had a carburetor problem and fell back a couple spots on the initial start and really fought that thing all day. And then the car was just evil. And those were my comments. This thing is evil, Billy. I don't know what we've done to it. And those are the times as a driver, the only thing you can do is hope that your crew and your guys and your crew chief, you know, believe in you and put their heads down and figure out how to fix it. And Billy could have really easily just laid down right then and said, you know, this guy's out of his mind. He's crazy, because this was the first time that we had worked together. And And, I mean, we went from, you know, one of the best cars in practice to, I mean, we fell a 10th and, you know, 15 laps or something. It was just, you know, basically dad, my dad's spots for me, was spotting for me, and it was, you know, I'm running the top groove where, you know, cup guys are at 50 laps into a run just trying to hold on to this thing. And, you know, he's screaming, don't wreck this thing. It's ugly. I can see it. And I was extremely impressed with Billy because he and the guys buckled down, and we came in the first stop and made a bunch of changes, and it took it from about a 9 loose, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 to a 6.
Wow.
And it should have fixed it, and we fought and fought and fought, and the last stop we got to talking about it on the radio, and I told him a couple thoughts I had, and I don't know what all, to this point right now, I don't know what all he did to the car for the last stop, but when we restarted second to the Roush car, and he spun the tires just a little bit, enough for me to get the nose on the outside of him on the start. And I ran it through 1 and 2 almost wide open again. It was like, okay, it's back to what it was. And yep, it was game time. And so
it sounded like game over to me.
Well, you know, it wasn't, because we ran about 8 or 9 laps, I guess, and it started getting really tight. So I turned my fans on and trying to keep the truck tires cool, and it's getting tighter and tighter. I'm like, oh, this may not be good. And then the caution comes down, and that, you know, when you got a pretty decent lead and the guy behind you's not running down, you're like, oh, this isn't going to be good. But as a driver, you think that because you don't want to give away a win. But then there's that. You know, whatever you call it, a demon inside of you that gets excited because you know you live for those moments. You live for the green white checkers as a racer, and that's what we ended up in. And we restarted leading the race, and basically I held it wide open through 1 and 2. It stuck, and it was I figured it's going to stick or it's not going to stick, one of the two. But I wasn't going to lose this race in these guys' hometown because I was, you know, not on my game. So we ran it wide open through there and almost through 3 and 4, and I knew at that time that they didn't have a prayer. So it was pretty neat. I came down pit road after the race, and very special. Had a lot of good friends there, and Billy's mom, it truly is a family racing organization, and his mom stuck her head in the car and gave me a big kiss on the cheek and was crying, so that was pretty neat. It meant a lot to me.
Scott, we want you to be a little more descriptive on the weekend. Can you? That is amazing, though.
You got, the cool thing is that from my perspective, Scott, I mean, it's obviously you're still excited about it, and that's neat.
That is neat. Absolutely.
Yeah, Billy explained it best. He called me. I didn't get to dinner Saturday night. I had a dinner I had to do Saturday night after the race, and we didn't get there till 10:30. Barely made it into the restaurant, and were there till 1 o'clock in the morning eating dinner. It was like when dinner was over, I was out. I was ready for bed. He called me in the middle of dinner, and I let it go to voicemail, and he called me right back. And so I was like, oh, there must be something going on. I better answer it. So I answered it in the middle of this dinner in downtown Chicago, a really nice restaurant. And I said, what's going on, man? He said, I just had to tell you, I have a smile on my face I can't remove.
So yeah, it was
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So what's it mean from here?
You never know. You really don't. But I'll tell you this much. My phone has been ringing off the hook.
Nice.
And it's been an interesting couple of months before this because that truck program was by no means what we thought it was going to be. And I said after that, you know, basically I've enlisted the help of a couple friends that have offered it. And I said, I'm no longer making any decisions in my own career. I'm too emotional about it because all I want to do is race, and I'm not smart.
The worst part, Scott, about that truck deal for me as the announcer was I wasn't allowed to tell everybody who you are, and that killed me. You know, it just killed me that night because we love it when you come to race at Volusia. I mean, you're such an integral part of that track. You grew up part of that track. You grew up there for all intents and purposes, and every time you show up, it's just, you know, it's electric, man. But nonetheless, we thank you when you do come out there. It's really neat to watch you race.
You know, that is, I love it. I mean, you know, you can ask a lot of people around me. It's all I want to do. I The dirt racing is just a blast, and the folks at Volusia are great, and they're working really hard. Tanya and Billy and everyone there, and you guys are just doing a great job. So we're Ron is kind of in my ear already. He's about I think I got this weekend off. I'm not sure yet, but he's in my ear. He's got a couple days off. My friend from down there that lives at Perry.
We're running them. We've got the sportsman ready to go, man. Love to see it.
I got a parking spot.
I looked on the internet this morning when I got out of bed. I'm not
going
to lie.
We have got 1 minute to go to wrap this up, but as always, such a pleasure to talk to you, and we can't thank you enough.
Congratulations, man.
Just a wonderful job, my man.
And Scott, do us a favor. When all you sort out all these phone calls and somebody else makes a decision about what direction your career is doing, call us back so we can talk about it.
All right, we'll do that. So thank you.
We'll start early.
It's our pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you to everyone back home.
All right, buddy. Congratulations.
See you this weekend, and congratulations again.
See you.
All right. Scott Lagus is checking in for all his buddies and all the family in St. Augustine.
Volusia Speedway Park this weekend.
Saturday night, Lucky 13 night. Two people, it's September 13th. Two people get in for only $13. Bring a friend, bring a family member, an enemy, whoever. Grab somebody off the street. Two people get into this racetrack for $13. It's only $10 each, but why not bring someone else for an extra $3?
And this weekend at New Smyrna Speedway, there's a big 100-lap late model challenge event. Some of the best late model drivers in all the state of Florida will be there competing. And the racing there will start at 7:30 this Saturday night. Next Monday night, we'll be back with Trackside Tonight. Billy?
Wednesday night, Dirt World, 7:30. Friday night, you see me at Ocala. Saturday night, Volusia Speedway Park.
Get well, Mike.
Good night, everybody.